And this is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you for the third and final hour of the programme. Now, our next guest was already booked to come in to speak to us this morning, and then a very significant announcement came from the Economy Minister in the Executive earlier this week, speaking at the Chamber in Stormont. We're joined, I'm delighted to say, in studio by Steve Fraser, who is the Managing Director at City of Derry Airport. Steve, a very, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald.
Great to have you with us, and obviously we do have an airport in Donegal, but for many people in Donegal, City of Derry is their airport of choice, and indeed, figures always seem to suggest that somewhere generally it's between 38 and 42% of traffic through City of Derry actually originates in Donegal.
That's exactly right, yeah. Depending on the service, depending on the time of year, but we average it at around 40%. If you take the Dublin route when it last existed, it was over two-thirds of passengers were from Donegal.
And City of Derry continues to grow in terms of the services it offers, in terms of the routes. I mean, at the moment, it's got a link directly to Heathrow. And I mean, I'm sure for many, many business people in particular, that Heathrow link is particularly important. And what's being pushed now more and more is using Heathrow as a gateway hub and signing deals between airlines that will allow people book a ticket that will literally see them get from Derry via Heathrow as a hub to multiple destinations across the world. You put your bags down at the security check-in in Derry and you pick them up, be it Dubai, be it Sydney, be it Barcelona, be it wherever.
That's it. You've done my job for me there. I couldn't have said it any better. That's right. We got 118 different destinations now connecting through Heathrow as a hub, 56 different countries. As you say, you drop your bag off with us, you get your boarding passes right through, and you don't see your bag again until you get to New York, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, wherever you're heading to.
Obviously, I mean, it sounds very straightforward, it sounds very easy, but to get that level of deal in that many cities with that many airlines, that, I'm sure, took a huge amount of negotiation, discussion, and background work to make it happen.
It has, yeah, and we're thankful with the strong partnership we have with Loganair, who've fosters those relationships with British Airways, Etihad, Emirates, to name but a few. And those interline tickets, those code shares that they have been a huge benefit. And thankfully, because that PSO service is a public service obligation, which is APD free, that continues on the second leg of your journey as well. So it's really well worth comparing the prices.
And the most recent figures released by the airport show us that the number of people availing of that service at City of Derry effectively has tripled over the course of the past 12 months.
That's right. The international figures since we started it last May have tripled, and they're growing. With interestingly enough, the Middle East being the most popular destinations, with Dubai, Abu Dhabi and Doha in the top three. And the American market is growing. Of course, people are looking at Dublin with that pre-clearance that they can avail off there. But Heathrow, one of the world's best hubs, offers so many options.
And we see flights now being restored to Liverpool. That's coming in, I think, in the next month or two, isn't it? That's one I've been watching with interest.
Oh, yeah, and me too, as a Liverpool fan. But Liverpool and Edinburgh both coming back with EasyJet. EasyJet's first time in City of Derry Airport, so we're very pleased for that. It's another step change for us. We really hope to grow those that frequency.
And that is an important one, because to get EasyJet, I mean, you know, it's a huge airline. It's servicing a number of cities that people are want to go to. I mean, you know, you could potentially be looking down the line at links, and I would have to say one of my favourite cities, for instance, is Barcelona. And I mean, to my mind, the idea of a link between Derry and Barcelona, I mean, that's the sort of thing I'm asking Santa for Christmas. But the way things are going at City of Derry Airport, it might well be achievable.
It would be achievable. We're already having discussions of what the next few phases look like, and I think maybe you should be asking Santa maybe a couple of Christmases time, maybe not too soon, because obviously we want to get those new routes in and re-established. Liverpool and Edinburgh were two of our most popular routes previously. We're delighted to have them back and delighted to have such a esteemed carrier like EasyJet on those routes as well.
And, you know, obviously there have been charters going through Derry to the Sun at specific times over specific years. We've seen various charters over the years. Are we getting to the point where we might see more scheduled, maybe twice weekly, three times weekly services to European cities going on a more regular basis? So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we might have a year-round service, possibly from EasyJet, possibly from somebody else, going to the Barcelonas, going to the Malagas, going perhaps to the Lanzarotes or wherever.
I think so. That's certainly in our conversations each time with the airline. realistically, you know, we have to get these new routes in, get them proved, and then show the airline the strength of the catchment here in the Northwest. But it's certainly on our to-do list, and we hope to be able to persuade the airlines to do that as well.
Derry City and Stranraer Free Council obviously have been crucial to the development of City of Derry Airport, and there's been a symbiotic link between the council and the airport right back to the days when what it was effectively Eglinton Airfield that was being extended and repurposed to a certain extent. It's come a long way since then, and the link with the council has been really, really important. But we heard this week from Minister Conor Murphy that his department, as part of their commitment to regional development, his department is looking at taking over the subsidy, £3.5 million a year. A subsidy previously was being provided by Derry City and Stranraer District Council. That subsidy now being provided directly from the department. How important is that?
That's vitally important for the future of the airport serving the entire Northwest. The figure's around £3 million, what the ask for government is over the next few years. Derry City and Saban have stuck with us for all these years. They're the owner of the airport. They've, you know, sole funded in most of the years the airport. They just can't continue with that model. As you know, people in Donegal, as we said, 40% users of the airport. People in Causeway and wider into other counties and regions are using the airport. And it was inherently unfair that one set of ratepayers were funding that benefit for the wider economic region.
And indeed, there have been calls for the Irish government to invest in City of Derry Airport as well. It did before, particularly when there was a direct service to Dublin, and that was covered by a PSO at the time. That Dublin service doesn't exist at the moment. And there's going to be two questions here. Question number one, I suspect I know the answer. Would you like to see the Irish government invest in City of Derry Airport? But question number two is there a feasible possibility that we may see a Dublin service return?
I think yes and yes. I'll take the first one. I think the calls are coming loud and clear from us. On the positive side, the Irish government have really welcomed the engagement. They're very understanding of the regional benefits right across the Northwest, in particular Donegal. And they're currently considering ways that they can better support the airport. You're right, in the past they did, and we're asking them to step up again. And the second on the Dublin, it's an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And every TD and minister we speak to can see the validity of it. I think there are just a few more little political elements to cover off. At the minute, it's sitting with the North-South Ministerial Council, and it'll be on that agenda to progress that in terms of the North-South connectivity and relations. So I'm very positive in the coming months that the government will see a way forward and a pathway for that.
The previous Dublin Derry service was under a PSO. Your presumption is that if there is to be a new one, it would be under a PSO as well?
Indeed, yeah. It's a commitment of the Irish government under the New Decade, New Approach in Annex B, and it's one that we want to see carried forward with all the elements of the New Decade, New Approach.
Yeah, and I mean, even as we were discussing that, Carlin came in and handed me a piece of paper, and the paper says, any Derry to Dublin flights planned in the future, and that was from Charlie. So, Charlie, we were actually in the process of asking the question as was coming in. The other question has come in again. Any possibility of direct flights to mainland Europe? At present, there are no flights to Germany or to mainland Spain. And I suppose what has to be done, number one, you've got to identify a commercial need, you've got to identify a market, and you've got to identify an airport to meet it.
That's right, yes.
Airline, sorry, I should say, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. And I think interest in Germany on that list, I know that certainly the Northern Ireland government and the relevant departments are looking at key countries to link us with, and there's currently a piece of work by DfE for the NI's connectivity strategy, and I know certainly Germany is listed in that along with several other countries, and we'll be working with them to say what is best for this catchment, what is best for the Northwest economy, and trying to encourage and incentivize those routes.
Now, I'm sure you're looking ahead and you're looking forward. I'm sure you're involved in discussions with various airlines, discussions with various potential destination airports, discussions with various charter companies. I know, obviously, you can't sit here and tell us what you're talking to and who you're talking to into the future. That's going to be commercially sensitive. And I'm sure some negotiations are at a very advanced stage. And knowing you, haven't spoken to you on a number of occasions over the years, I have no doubt, but you're at advanced stage discussions with various things. Are you confident looking forward that we will see this level of expansion and growth at City of Derry Airport continue into the future?
Oh, I most certainly, yeah. Dublin is our absolute number one key target, and you know, we haven't been asked for anything more. We've provided all the evidence on demand and benefits, most of that independently as well. It stands up by itself. We're just looking for the politicians to get together because it is a PSO that we're requesting. And in terms of sort of greater routes, the Dublin it'll prove itself out. That's guaranteed. Heathrow's already proven itself. The demand from the northwest and the growth that's needed in the economy right across the northwest, both Donegal, Derry, and Strabane and beyond. You need a functioning airport. You need your FDIs encouraged by that improved connectivity. We will grow, and we'll grow at the same rate as the region. Donegal's grown a little bit faster than Derry in recent years, and we're seeing our passenger numbers grow even more. So it's really important right across the northwest.
And would the if a Dublin service is restored, as we all hope it will be, would that then allow for similar deals to be made using Dublin Airport as a hub and allowing people check in Derry and go through Dublin and maybe get through pre-clearance at Dublin Airport and then arrive at Orlando or New York or Boston or Washington or wherever and be able to avail of that one throughput service, one ticket, and get the cases delivered directly through?
Very much so, exactly as you've said, yeah. There'll be that point-to-point connectivity, which will be ever so important. But, yeah, that onward connectivity would be seamless. It would be drop your bag in Derry and pick it up in Chicago or wherever else it is you're heading. And, of course, you'd go into the US, you'd benefit from that pre-clearance.
The fact that there is an airport as well in Donegal, and I'm sure you would be in discussions with your colleagues in Donegal Airport. It's an interesting one that Donegal Airport is serving a very specific market in the west of Donegal, and it's doing very well. And City of Derry Airport sort of serving East Donegal in Leashon, et cetera, et cetera. What are relations like between the two airports? I mean, I'm sure you're in discussions. I'm sure you have to have talks, and I'm sure there's cordial relations between the two.
They're very cordial and very cooperative. I met with Donegal Airport in Athlone just a few weeks ago. The Irish airports met together. I go out of my way whether I'm talking to TDs, Donegal Airport, ministers, say we are ever so supportive of Donegal. Everything we do, nothing should be to the detriment of Donegal. They're two very different catchments, as you know. But, of course, a Donegal to Dublin service that exists at the minute, the Derry to Dublin can coexist with that. The two of them are for very different reasons. Very good relationships. We work together on security training, on fire training, in some runway inspections. There's a lot of similarities. So we're genuinely not in competition and we're supportive of each other. There's very different rural needs in that far north, northwest area to there is the sort of the commercial capitals of Derry and Letterkenny.
And in a sense, you've actually anticipated my next question there, because it was going to be, is there, and I'm sure some people in West Donegal might be slightly concerned, if there were to be a direct Dublin service from City of Derry, the fear might be, well, would that potentially have an impact on the Donegal service? Would that potentially, maybe compromise that Donegal service, particularly as, and we've been hearing this from Conor McCarthy this week, for instance, from Emerald Airlines that runs that PSO service to Dublin from Donegal on behalf of Aer Lingus, that because of the Aer Lingus, the Dublin airport cap, and I'm sure this is something that's going to have to factor into these discussions very, very much. There is a cap in Dublin airport, and we're hearing more and more now about flights having to be cancelled into Dublin because there's too many passengers flying in. There's a campaign to get PSOs exempt from that and treated separately. And I'm sure all that's going to have to factor into your discussions as well. Number one, you're not going to want to compromise existing flights going in from elsewhere in Donegal. But number two, you're going to want to make sure that you don't agree a service and then suddenly have that service potentially compromised because of a cap in Dublin.
Oh, very much so on both points. Our service and the case for is the catchment we serve, largely Letterkenny, Derry and Strabane, that wider northwest area. That stands up by itself. It's not at all to the detriment of Donegal. The two can coexist and for different reasons. The cap's a really interesting one. My view on the cap is that there's a lot of, I think 48% of people would use it for business, a lot of those connecting. So if you say roughly half of them are connecting passengers, we shouldn't be counting those twice. There are already people that need to get to Dublin by another route. So they wouldn't be included. In my head, they wouldn't be included in the figures. You shouldn't be double counting. That person can only be, they're already in the airport for international travel. They're connecting domestically. They shouldn't be counted twice. And the nature of a PSO is it'll have to go to a procurement exercise, and anyone bidding for that would have to have slots in Dublin already, or maybe be replacing an existing flight, so they might balance each other out. But, of course, it is a consideration, and it's one we hope will be worked through the planning process fairly soon. What we're hearing is 6 to 9 months before that cap's able to be lifted through the planning process at best. And that's as long as it'll take us, really, to go through the technicalities of delivering the PSO and getting it up and running. So I think the two align pretty well.
In terms of the potential expansion of City of Derry into the future, obviously the airport, it's continually expanding, you're continually building on, you're improving your service, you're improving the infrastructure at the airport. If the airport is to continue to grow to the extent that it potentially can. Are you at some point going to have to be looking at maybe extending the terminal building, extending the facilities, extending the lounges, extending the security, extending the background in infrastructure in terms of the lights and even potentially at some point down the line extending the runway?
No to the runway. I think that's fair to say. The current terminal capacity is around 600,000 and we're operating around 200,000 passengers a year at the minute. So we have plenty of scope, plenty of time to go. You could say in 5 to 6 years' time, we may be looking at a terminal extension. We'll need to see that growth and we'll need to see that trend of that direction to be able to do that. We have plenty of capacity to triple what we're doing at the minute. It would be quite cozy if we get to that 600,000 point.
But it's a bit down the road yet.
A wee bit down the road yet, at least 6-7 years away.
Finally, in terms of local transport links, we know that they're talking about upgrading the line from Derry to Coleraine to make it a double line, and there's talk of maybe shutting down that rail line for anything up to a year just to get that work, to make that a double line linking Derry and Coleraine, which will allow even more frequent services from Derry to Belfast. One of the things they're talking about as part of that extension of the rail line is the development of a City of Derry Airport station. They're talking about City of Derry Airport as a potential station, Ballykelly as a potential station, and a potential station somewhere just beyond Ebrington as well. Do you believe a rail link from City of Derry into the transport hub on the water side would be good for the airport in terms of it might persuade more people to go, oh, well, there's a handy link, train onto the airport, onto the flight. It makes it a bit more attractive, because at the moment maybe there isn't scheduled public transport links that people are aware of from the airport into town. How big a game changer would a rail link from the airport be?
It'd certainly be a big positive. I think it'd make many people's journeys from the city a lot easier. Really disappointing it's not on the All Ireland Rail Review. Has been slight mention by many groups, and people may not know, but the rail line runs inside the airport a few meters from the runway. Our air traffic controllers actually control the stops of the trains.
I have, I think, 3 times been on trains that had to stop because a plane was coming into land, actually. Yeah. I thought it's the ultimate level crossing. Yeah. I've been used to, over the years, stopping at a level crossing to allow a train past. It's the only place I've ever been stopped to allow a plane land.
Yeah, when the plane's coming in, the plane obviously takes priority. It can't stop mid-air, but we do give the trains priority for the outgoing aircraft should they be coming at that same time. So the proximity would make it a value proposition in terms of the cost for it to provide a stop or a halt. For me, again, I don't want to reuse the term, but it's another no-brainer. It would be low cost. It would also serve the village of Eglinton as well. Really disappointed, as I said, it's not firmly in the All-Ireland Rail Review, but we'll keep campaigning and keep lobbying to improve all the stops between Derry and Coleraine.
Steve Fraser, it's been a great conversation. It's been wonderful having you here. So I've had the pleasure of speaking to you on the phone on a number of occasions, but for news interviews, they tend to be a lot shorter. So it's been good to be able to tease out a number of issues and just have this conversation. And it's great to see the airport continuing to expand. And certainly for those like myself who'd be maybe looking for services into the future to European cities, and certainly that link to Dublin, great to hear that they're potentially going to come in down the line. EasyJet coming to Derry. It's an exciting one. It's a very important one, and who knows what the future holds. But for now, Steve Fraser, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio, and we're going to go once again to Zoom this morning. We're joined on Zoom by Patrick Sharkey and Seamus Devenny, both of whom are members of the Defective Block Banking and Insurance Focus Group. Now, the focus groups have played a very important part of the Defective Block campaign in the past number of years, and both Patrick and Seamus have been on numerous delegations and protests, and most importantly, at meetings with the banks, with the insurance companies, with government representatives and with others, to put forward the various proposals that are coming from Donegal. And we know the People's Document makes a certain number of demands, which obviously they are signatories to as well. Delighted to welcome both Patrick and Seamus onto the programme this morning. Patrick, I'm going to go to yourself first. You've been engaging with banks and the Banking Payments Federation of Ireland and the Central Bank since May of last year. How has that past 15, 16 months been in terms of those discussions?
Okay, well, Donald, thanks very much for having us on. I suppose we began our engagement with the banks and the Banking Payment Federation back in May last year. We've very much been attempting to emphasise to the banks the need to do more and to be involved in helping us through this really difficult period. I suppose our initial focus has been on two things. Firstly, the need for cash, the need for the banks to assist people. The nature of the grant scheme is that it's retrospective. So in other words, you've got to incur the work and the spend in order to draw down the grant. And secondly, we've been asking them the very important question of, you know, does this scheme work in terms of mortgageability? Have the banks examined the different remediation options, and will that restore our ability to borrow on the property? So that's been very much our focus, Donal.
Seamus, bringing you into the conversation, 0% cost to homeowners in terms of necessary bridging loans and guarantees on mortgageability post-remediation. Very important points. Are you getting the answers that you require in your discussion, Seamus?
Well, it's a complicated thing, isn't it? Number one, no. But if we look in at the background, when we started this conversation, we were looking for moratoriums on mortgage payments while houses were being remediated. We were looking for the banks to step in where the government had provided a scheme that partially, you know, fixed your house if it was an option one. But nobody would really have the capital to start those building works. So we latched on to the idea of that zero cost loan proposal, and we found that we had, you know, good kind of working relationship with the Banking Payment Federation of Ireland, and were able to put structure something together and get that to the government, the Department of Housing, in September of 2023. Now, that was largely ignored for 9 months. I think it was something around about June that we found out that that would be, it was ignored until June by the Department of Housing, essentially. And then it was dismissed out of hand completely.
In terms of the relationship with the banks, one of the arguments of the campaign groups going right back over the years has been that banks are not disinterested bystanders. Banks hold mortgages. Banks hold a very specific interest in these homes. So banks cannot be regarded as bystanders in this. Banks do have a stake in it.
Let me just jump in very quickly. Right. You think back to 2017, when people were really, really, MAG and organizations like that were really bringing to the forefront what was the science, the issues, really, really getting broadly around this issue of the defective concrete block problem up here. And at that stage, the banks were ignoring it completely. So in 2017, a report was drawn up to look at this issue, and it was commuted into what we know now as the first iteration of the scheme. At that stage, the banks were sitting on the ditches and just ignoring it completely. In fact, one of our lobby group members, Sarah Shovlin, received a letter saying, "This isn't our fault," in quotes. Oh, sorry, "it's not our fault." Right. Mm-hmm. So you can see where their attitude was at that stage. It was nothing to do with them, nothing to see here, folks. You need to sort this out yourselves. So in the last, say, since January 2023 or February 2023, when we got together for the first time, this lobby group, we've managed to pull them to the fore. But I want to draw Patrick in here, if it's OK, Patrick, because you know a little bit more about why it was that we were able to pull them to the table, and this had never really been done before, is we pointed out their mortgage obligations that they were beholden to and we were beholden to.
Absolutely, Seamus. So I suppose when you take out a mortgage, Donal, everyone has a set of terms and conditions that they must adhere to. And within the standard terms and conditions, there are obligations in relation to maintaining your property, and not allowing a property to come into disrepair. In addition to that, we were very startled when we realised that in the terms and conditions, the demolition of a property is regarded as an automatic default event, which means that effectively the bank can call in your debt. So we were very alarmed at this. And when we pointed out to the banks that, you know, what's within their own terms and conditions, I think they very quickly realised that they had to engage with us and start addressing the issues. So if I may just return to the point in relation to the restoration of our homes to mortgageable condition, We asked the banks to delve into the different remediation options, 2 to 5, what it meant. And certainly it took them a while to actually realize that this issue is actually quite complicated. We spoke about the science, we spoke about IS 465 and the reviews that have been carried out. So ultimately, Donal, the banks arrived at a conclusion which made sense to us, where they stated that the issue of future mortgageability is not an issue for the banks alone. It needs to include sort of a work across between the banks, the auctioneers who are marketing and valuing the properties, the engineers who are certifying the structural reliability of the properties, and also, very importantly, the legal profession who, you know, are registering the security for the mortgages. So on that point, the banks very quickly proposed a working group to effectively get the stakeholders together round the table and work through the issues. The central bank themselves, who we also engaged with, very much pushed for this working group to happen. And eventually the working group was agreed to and first met in January, Donal. A second meeting took place in April.
It's been very quiet since though, hasn't it?
Very, very quiet, Donal. And both of the working group meetings were, I suppose, they lacked a focus. The banks themselves wrote to the chair, which was, you know, the officials in the Department of Housing, looking for the terms of reference and the agreed action points to be addressed by the group. No such responses were ever given. And, Donal, I suppose the main reason we wanted to talk to you today is we had a meeting with the BPFI last week at which we were told that the working group had been disbanded.
Had you been told that?
No, we hadn't. We found out secondhand through the BPFI. The BPFI and the banks have senior people on this issue now, Donal, and they, it's fair to say, are exasperated by this. They're extremely disappointed. You know, they've referred to working groups that were set up under the Department of Taoiseach for Priory Hall and the complexities that arose there. They said that that working group was taken very seriously, was very effective. But in this instance, we up here in Donegal, Donal, are being treated differently yet again.
Whose decision was it to disband that working group? Because if the group was set up by agreement between yourselves, BPFI, Central Bank, Department of Housing, etc., was it a department decision to disband the working group? And then it begs the question, what was the department's view of the working group? Did it see the working group as a way of coming up with actual workable solutions that could be implemented, or did it see it as a delaying tactic?
Well, we understand the Department of Housing themselves were of the view that the work of the group had been completed, which we simply can't understand, Donal.
Right. And
Seamus,
I want
to take you in on that,
Sorry, let me jump in. It was the Department of Housing who pulled the plug. That's most important, right? And it mean, ultimately, when we put all these stakeholders together, we were speaking to the BPFI in 2023, at the end of 2023, calling for this. Let's all sit down together, because at least then, we can't have one group say, well, it's not actually us, it's these other people, you should go to talk to them. Putting everybody in one room seemed like a really, really good idea. We did propose that we would have this meeting and that we would chair it and we would control it. But it was decided by powers outside of ourselves that the Department of Housing would be best suited to do that. And guess who chaired it? The Department of Housing. And guess what it did? Absolutely nothing. It was postponed for a few months before the second meeting, and then was postponed for, 4 or 5 months, and then was disbanded without telling us. We spoke to the central bank yesterday in a meeting, and they were also absolutely gobsmacked that this had been shut down. Now, what we're talking about here is mortgageability. What we're talking about here is the market value of the hardworking people of Donegal who've been paying their mortgages for decades, potentially, myself, I would be just over 2 decades now paying my mortgage, right? Our houses are worth absolutely nothing because of a deregulation issue. That's what the issue is here, a quality control and deregulation issue. We have a plaster band-aid on a cancer, essentially, of a scheme. It doesn't do anything. And it leaves these holes open for mortgageability and marketability where we don't know where we stand.
A really important thing, a really important thing coming up at the moment is this whole issue of downgrading, where effectively we have an engineer will tell you one thing because the engineer has tested for pyrotite and has looked at various sulfate attack and has looked at other things. The department's engineers, going by the department's protocols, predominantly IS-465, the department's engineers are saying, no, everything is okay. We don't need to demolish. We just need to do the outer leaf. So the department is saying one thing. The other engineer is saying something else. Now, if I'm a bank and if I'm looking at the mortgageability of a house, I am not going to follow a government line. If I have one engineer telling me, Asher, it is grand, and I have another engineer telling me, yeah, this could fall down in 20 years' time. I know which engineer, as a mortgage provider and as a mortgage issuer, I'm going to believe. And it seems to me that with this downgrading issue we have at the moment, that's going to make the mortgageability issue even less solvable than it was in May of last year.
Absolutely, Donal. And, you know, just on that point, there's a group of downgraded homeowners who are working together at the moment. We had a representative from that group present to the central bank this week. The central bank have said that is very informative for them. Central bank are always very reluctant to comment publicly on these issues. And they do work sort of behind the scenes. But the central bank were left under no illusions that the Department of Housing Engineers are conducting these downgrades with absolute disregard to mortgage contracts and the obligations of homeowners to their bank.
And where does that then leave the homeowner in terms of the mortgage that they're holding? Because even if the department is going to tell the homeowner, no, this is grand, it's fine. I mean, one of the key things it's going to take for mortgageability, one of the absolute cornerstones, is going to be an engineer signing a declaration that this house is now free of defect. Yeah. And I'm going to sign off on this. A lot of engineers are going to be very, very loath to sign a document that says that in the current climate, it seems.
Donald, again, the working group was set up for this very purpose. These very technical issues that need to be worked through between the stakeholders, the engineers, the banks, need to be around the table and actually discussing how is this going to work in practice. The central bank, when we met them first in September last year, their first comment to us was, there's been a lack of joined up thinking in putting this scheme together. There needs to be joined up thinking between the stakeholders. The working group, Donal, is set up for this purpose. And again, all the more reason that we're just absolutely dumbstruck by the Department of Housing pulling the plug on it.
Have you had direct contact, Seamus, yet with the Department of Housing in terms of asking them, number one, why they've pulled the plug, and asking them, number two, what do they intend putting in its place to ensure that these discussions continue? Because one thing that's crystal clear from this conversation we're having is that those discussions and the need for them are far from over.
Yeah, the conversation doesn't work like that with the Department of Housing. For example, after the second working group subcommittee meeting, that was in April, and the last of, as it turned out, it was the last one, Derek Rafferty spoke to one of our members and said it's vitally important that we continue this conversation outside this room. But it was clear that was bluster, the kind of bluster that comes along with these kinds of meetings, and there was absolutely zero follow-up. And so there's no direct line of communication. The easiest way for us to work through these banking issues with the Department of Housing seems to be so far through the BPFI and through the central bank. That those are the kind of avenues of communication. So to answer your question, no, there's no direct line there at all.
So where do we now sit from your point of view? What's your next move going to be?
Let me just run back to something you said. I thought it was very interesting what you said there about if I were a bank, right? Mm-hmm. Would I take the word of, you know, anybody or an engineer as to whether or not the house is good? And then would that stand for mortgageability? Well, we're in a situation right now where the banks are saying, yes, we're happy to take the 40-year guarantee for options 2 to 5 as a certificate that the building is fine. But they still operate within the statement that the banking sector released through the BPFI in December 2023, which says we rely on third parties to ascertain the quality and security of assets that we're mortgaging on. So in other words, we have, you know, we're not the people to look to for certification. So they will clearly look to engineers. And at the moment, we have a cohort of zombie engineers, who a denatured bunch of engineers called the HA engineers. And as far as I'm concerned, they're a parallel to the scabs on the picket line, essentially.
Now, I don't want to go get personal like that, Seamus, but yeah, I do take the point.
I'm not talking about anybody individually. Yeah. I'm just saying that there's a cohort of people who are certifying these buildings. Whereas when they're not working for the HA, they're perfectly unhappy to touch it. Like they're running away from these. And as you said yourself, no self-respecting engineer would sign off on partial remediations. I believe you said it.
Well, what I said was that, I mean, the banks it seems to me the banks will not accept a house if there is another engineer saying those foundations haven't been tested,
those inner
walls are at risk. And if the banks are hearing another engineer that's not gone through the HA telling them that, well, those foundations are compromised, those inner walls are compromised, that house could fall down in 20 years, the bank's going to be very, very loath to allow a full mortgage on that house for the next however many decades it is.
I think, Donald,
I think you're right there.
Sorry, I suppose, you know, from a bank's point of view, they rely on the PI cover of the engineer who's certifying it. So in other words, that they've recourse to their professional indemnity. And that's the measure of mortgageability, Donald.
Yeah.
You know, will an engineer put their PI cover on the line? There's just one other issue I'd just like to sort of highlight. There's another cohort of victims in this whole saga coming to light. And that is where people are, for a variety of normal reasons, looking to sell their home. In many cases, these are homes, Donal, that's been standing for 20 years plus and showing no signs of deterioration. One by one, sales are falling through where there's test results coming up showing readings for mica, but not for the other deleterious materials in terms of pyrite or pyrotite. We noted Professor Dunlop on the radio earlier in the week pointing out that, you know, there needs to be, again, the joined up thinking, there needs to be a measure developed, to, you know, in terms of acceptable or negligible levels of risk to allow homeowners to move on and sell their properties. The banks, you know, we've been making them aware of this. And again, they're saying, well, look, we need the forum to be convened where we can develop something along the lines of what's happening in the southwest of England and, the Mundick issue down there where, tests can be carried out on homes, acceptable or negligible levels of risk where people can move on. Because at the moment, people's sales are falling through. There's an excess of 5% mica, no sign of the other internal sulfate attack. And people are just left in limbo. And it's causing untold stress and strain on people, Donald.
And just to repeat what that Paul Dunlop and Dr. Anders Lehmann did say on the program earlier this week, what their survey found was that, yes, mica deterioration is coming through in evidence quite rapidly, but in many cases there is internal sulfate attack. But because the outer wall is getting wet by the elements, it's faster. The inner wall isn't getting wet, so the deterioration in the inner leaf and in many cases the foundations isn't as fast and as obvious as the outer leaf deterioration, but it is happening just at a much slower rate. And whereas it isn't an issue now, it can be an issue in 10, 15, 20 years' time. It can be a very different situation. Seamus Devenny and Patrick Sharkey, listen, thank you both indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Can I just ask you to do one shout out very quickly? When we're speaking to the banks, and we are doing this on a regular basis, and most recently we're sitting down with PTSB last week, they're saying that they only have a few hundred people speaking to them. Now, clearly, anecdotally, we know that 50,000 average homes came from the Granshaw Quarry alone. So that's northeast Donegal. Where are those people? We need people to create the metrics to shift this situation forward. The banks are not stupid. And now that they've been dragged into this, they are actively trying to find solutions. And we are working very, very closely with them. But we need the numbers to be able to make the argument. If we have such a small cohort as they can ignore, then they will ignore it because they're a business. Now, we need people to step forward. If you're in a situation where you don't feel that you have the financial, who does have the finances to engage with the scheme? If you feel you don't have it, that's not really the most important thing. The most important thing is to say it to your bank anyway. Say it to the bank. Say, yeah, we have this situation. Let's get these metrics. Let's get these numbers. Let's create an argument to be able to move things forward.
Seamus Devaney and Patrick Sharkey, thank you both very much indeed. And this is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Just a few of your comments. Caller says, what Derry needs is a route destination to the sun, e.g. Malaga. Another caller saying, does that person objecting to the Derry Letterkenny rail link know that the volume of traffic commuting daily between Derry and Letterkenny, not forgetting the town is the gateway to the largest populated Gaelic areas? I don't believe anyone was speaking against a Letterkenny-Derry rail link. Far from it. Certainly, Steve Bradley was pushing very much for it. His concern was that prioritising Derry Portadown without reference to Derry Letterkenny was going to be the wrong decision to take. The only thing we ever seem to do is talk. Very little action ever happens. We've been talking about rail and roads and bridges for years, but nothing is getting built, so says a caller. Very special request is after coming in. Just want to say a happy birthday to Kathleen Nicol. That comes from Margaret Dill and family in Kerrykeel. Hope you have a lovely day. Now, let's go to Aisling Arnold, who is the chair of the Donegal branch of the Irish Hotels Federation. And we know that the hotels and others in the hospitality sector had been hoping for a VAT reduction in the budget. That wasn't forthcoming. And Aisling says the government is completely out of touch after the budget. Aisling, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. Lovely to speak with you.
And with you as well. Aisling, were you hopeful that there would have been a reduction in the VAT again back down to 9%? Because certainly it seemed any comments coming from Pascal Donoghue and other ministers, with one or two exceptions, would have been, to say the least, negative.
Well, I suppose, Donald, we've been lobbying now for nearly the guts of a year in relation to this. And I suppose the, you know, our hope was that the government would listen and take on board the challenges that we have been facing. And I suppose the very disappointing thing is here that it seems that the government's exceptionally out of touch with the challenges that the hospitality sector is facing. You know, over the last 24 months in particular, we have been faced with eye-watering price increases and rising costs, the impact of the 13.5%, and, you know, exceptionally tight margins. So, you know, we were, whilst, you know, the feedback was certainly kind of negative towards the end there, over the last 12 months, we were working very hard for our industry to and hope that they would listen and take on board the actual reality of what's happening on the ground here.
I don't want to turn this into a Dublin versus Donegal or Dublin versus the rest of the country, but one of the narratives that's coming from this discussion appears to be that there are hotels in Dublin that are charging what they want on the weekend that there's a gig, that are doing very well, thank you very much indeed, and that many in government are extrapolating from that, that that means all hotels all around the country are doing equally well. Does there need to be some sort of differentiation made between hotels in Dublin and hotels elsewhere?
Well, I suppose the first thing, just as a Donegal hotelier, I suppose I can't particularly comment about hotel prices elsewhere, other than to say that, you know, while some of the rates in question get a lot of attention, they're certainly no way representative of the true value available on, you know, other nights of the year throughout the country as a whole. You know, in total, we have 63,000 hotel rooms available nationally on a given night, accommodating, you know, near 150 guests. So I don't think it would be fair for people to think that room rates in question are anyway representative of the value available throughout the country. So, you know, to answer your question, is that something that they're going to look at? Possibly not. Is it something that could be done? Again, that's just not really for me to say as a Donegal hotelier. But, you know, certainly here in rural Ireland, we know that our prices have been very fair throughout the year.
What needs to happen now in terms of government supports? The government is very much pressing, well, we do want to support businesses. We do want to make sure that our businesses, our hotels, our hospitality sector are viable. We haven't had the VAT reduction that you've been seeking. What needs to happen now?
Well, there needs to be a reassessment of the government's policies, approach to the Irish hospitality and tourism. And that's in order to stave off a growing commercial crisis within the sector before it's too late. And this will involve a direct intervention by the government party leaders to address alarming deterioration in the commercial model of the hospitality food services. Like, we have to not forget that the hospitality and tourism industry employs, it's one of the largest employers in Ireland, supporting over 280,000 livelihoods, and 70% of that is actually outside of Dublin. So I think, you know, just to answer again your question, I think we are hopeful that they will, you know, make the, I suppose, have the urgent reassessment of the government's policy is the most important thing here for us. And, you know, there's the grants there that have come out. But, you know, again, unfortunately, the stipulations that have come around those grants are just not fit for purpose.
Aisling Arnold, the Donegal Chair of the Irish Hotel Federation's branch. Thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And obviously we'll be keeping in touch with this as we go on. But for now, Aisling, thank you. And we wish you and your colleagues in the IHF well.
Thank you very much, Donal. Lovely to talk to you.
You too. Right, before we go for a quick break, our competition winner, Christine Boyle of Three Linen View in Kilmacrenan. And Christine correctly told us that the song in question was Like a Virgin by Madonna. I made it through the wilderness. Somehow I made it through. Shut up, don't. One or two quick comments before we go. I was looking at flights to Orlando. It was €150 each cheaper to fly out of Dublin than go via Derry. That's okay if it's just one person, but for a family of five, that's some saving just to go a few hours down the road. And a final comment on the school phones and the SPHE. Caller says, I can't believe the government could come up with €9 million just for storage of phones. Like, that could be spent on all the children waiting on back operations, children that are homeless, more respite for people that need it, and for the waiting list on hospital services. I could go on. Very confident to take this in now with the new SPHE curriculum the government wants in schools. It's disgusting and sickening, and well done to Mary T. Sweeney for speaking out. And that's the 9 till noon show for today. We're back with the show tomorrow. Greg and the team are travelling down to Kilkenny for the awards ceremony, and we wish them well. I'll be here for the show tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have some good news over the weekend. Thank you to Caroline and to Shannon. Caroline producing, of course, as always. Thank you to you for listening, and to all our contributors as well. But for me, Donal Kavanagh, John Breslin coming up next, of course, around the Northwest. But for now, have a very good day.